Well, in our last few weeks here that we have been studying about this crisis of safety and these three great untruths that we talked about, just a real quick review, the great untruth of fragility, where everybody is fragile, you know, walking on eggshells around, don't want to offend anybody, so you need a lot of safety. We talked about the mindset of, you know, preparing the child for the road versus the road for the child. We want to prepare our young people and our, you know, just, again, this is not a spiritual thrust that these men have, but they do have some very logical and principled things there. You want to prepare them to be able to handle things, but you don't want to clear the way for them to where it's just soft and easy. We also talked about how emotional discomfort was equated to physical danger. So if you're emotionally discomfortable and or you don't feel good, you're uncomfortable, I should say, then you're in physical danger. And so you have the right to react at that same thing. We talked about safe spaces, how they originated in Brown University. And, you know, we talked about they had the area with the coloring books and the Play-Doh and the cookies. And Mrs. Smits has been kind of picking on me about that. Anytime me and Chris start going at it a little bit, we like joke around a lot in the office. And I'll say, Chris, you offended me and you triggered me. And Ms. Smits hears it and she says, now, Adam, I've got my Play-Doh over here. You just come over here and play, or I'll go make you some cookies. And so we've been having a lot of fun with that. But really, it's happening with 20 and 21-year-olds in colleges where they needed these type of safe spaces and things. We talked about how people then, the untruth of emotional reasoning. Emotional reasoning, very important one, that people start with their feelings. So we justify our feelings by concluding someone has committed an act of aggression against me. We talked about the microaggressions and how people then interpret that, oh, that was aggressive. So therefore, you know, I use my emotions to justify why I'm right, they're wrong, and so forth. And that led to, of course, you know, the intent versus impact. Someone may not have intended for you to take it the way that they said it. That happens all the time. It's called misunderstandings. You may say something and have no idea that this person was going to take it that way, but because it impacted me in a negative way, so therefore I need to go after you and you need to stop being violent and aggressive against me. We talked about that quite a bit. And then we ended with, and I'm going to pull this chart back up. We ended with this kind of picture here. Maybe you have that still from last week or a couple weeks ago. And this is the us versus them. Us versus them. And again, it's the authors of this call it great untruths. These are lies that are being told and promoted to young people today. That society is full of us versus them. Like there's the rich and the poor. Or, you know, and as this chart says, there is the privileged on the top and the oppressed on the bottom. And of course, the farther you are in the vertical perpendiculars here, notice what they put. And this is what they actually teach in colleges. This is what they publish. This is what the journal articles that they research and study. This is what they promote. That at the very top, the worst thing you could be as far as a privileged person is a heterosexual white male. If you're a heterosexual white male, you are the most awful, oppressive person, powerful, and you're against everybody else. And on the bottom, non-white, female, gay, or lesbian. They're the most oppressed. Again, it's a bipolarity that they try to teach. It's us versus them. That everybody in the world, or especially they would say more in America, the mean country of terrible, country of freedom. Okay. Well, it drives me nuts. We got a country of freedom that people have died for so that you can stand there freely and spout your stupidity and then get mad that you're in a country that allows you to do that. I cannot fathom it. It's illogical. It's satanic is what it is, because that's the only way you can think that way. And so here you have, so you've got everybody in America and everybody can be categorized into two different things. You're either a victim or you're an oppressor. You're either the one that's rich and powerful or you're the ones that are over here that are the victims. Now, obviously, there are situations where there's oppressors and victims. And Bill and I were talking about that whole Epstein deal, I guess, with all these rich people. You've been keeping up with that? All these billionaires in the world, apparently. Human trafficking and all these things they're doing that are horrible. Horrible. But there's so much money, they just pay people off and do what they want. So there are situations where there's the rich and the powerful that are oppressing people and stealing girls and human trafficking, horrible stuff. But then to just make the conclusion, and they jump to this, All right, our ideologies are different. You differ from me. So then rather than just respectfully, I respect your opinion, no problem, but I got to disagree with you, we can still be friends. You know, you can disagree on something and still be friends. I know that's shocking. Wonderful, right? I don't know. But that's the way they have to categorize people. So these kids are being taught it's us versus them. You're the poor victim. You're the poor victim college student that ran up $200,000 of debt so you can drink and smoke pot the whole time and get out of college and have no job. And so it's the mean white people's fault that oppressed you. Well, you're the idiot that partied in college and got a degree in basket weaving. I'm sorry. But victim versus, it's always somebody else's fault. That is the story of being a victim. You know what? We need to be teaching our young people and our children? Take responsibility. You did something wrong, own up to it. Don't be a victim. Well, you didn't do that to so-and-so. I don't care about so-and-so. I love that verse. And again, Bill was talking to me about it a couple years ago and it stuck with me. Where the Lord told Peter, who cares what I tell John to do? What is that to you? You go do what I tell you to do. Who cares if I tell John to sit right here beside me and do nothing and drink sweet tea? That's none of your business. But we got to be the victim, so we got to find fault with everybody else. Instead of owning up to what we did. We need to teach our young people and our kids. You made a mistake. Great, no problem. We all make mistakes. We all sin. We go through difficulties. Get it right and move on. Own up to it. Grow from it. The Lord will bless you in that. He said, "Who me loves, he chastens." He'll chasten you, and you'll grow. Oh, it made me weaker. I'm triggered. No, it'll make you a better young person, a better Christian, a better believer. So this whole victimhood, this culture of being a victim, it's always somebody else's fault. It's never mine. I'm being oppressed. Poor me. This is the culture that we're living in. Again, they have other things. Able-bodied people versus disabled. I mean, why are we trying to draw a bipolarity between abled people and disabled people? You know, most disabled people that I've met have better attitudes than abled people. They're not having a pity. Most of the ones I've met, I'm sure there are some, they're not over there having a pity party. They're forging ahead and doing what they can. And some of you see these athletes with the leg things and they're running track and all this. I'm like, man, I can't even run a mile. What in the world? These guys are awesome. You know, most of them are like, you know, we're not going to feel sorry for ourselves. We're going to forge ahead. That's wonderful. But the mindset of our country, the liberal mindset is, oh, we've got to draw a distinction. We've got to drive a divisive wedge between those people. And for the most part, I don't really think the normal people even see it as a problem. I like helping people out. I like helping disabled people out. Whatever. My sister's disabled. She has a better attitude than I do. She's been in a motorized cart chair thing since she was 20. And she has a better outlook on life than I do. Sometimes I'm over there complaining and getting upset and remembering and she's over there, I'm in a lot of pain today. But we're having a great time. I'm doing what I can with my son. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go pray through or something. This is terrible. But we got to drive a wedge. We got to divide people. And that is the culture of this liberal mindset today in America. Us versus them. And so they're so upset at what's going on and they can't stand that, you know, the economy's doing well. They can't stand that, you know, these ideologies and the stuff at the, we can't even get into all that mess, but that's a whole nother debacle for another time. They even try to draw lines between the infertile and the fertile. That boggles my mind. You're oppressed because you can't have kids. And that person over there can. Man, they're privileged. I don't know. Upper class versus poor. Male versus female. We hear that a lot, don't we? You know, white versus non-white. Gay, lesbian versus heterosexual. I mean, they're just, we've got to always have victims versus oppressors. And it has resulted in this culture of literally lawlessness and chaos. These are some of the things we're going to talk about today. How has these three great untruths of I'm fragile and I've got to reason emotionally and especially the us versus them leads to let's gang up. That's all the victims got to get together and we got to go after those privileged and oppressed people. And this is what we're going to talk about today. Several actual incidents that happen in our country. I called them untruths in action. Look at the one on the right. I know you can't hardly read it. That sign. Become what? Ungovernable. That's really what we want, don't we? Just no law, no order, and everybody doing whatever they want. Every time that's happened in the history of this world, it's resulted in complete collapse. They want to take the power over, basically. And so, just the mindset here. And they were, of course, burning things. Just have, look at that one on the left there. It says, kill Trump. Unbelievable. No. That's what we're getting to next. That's what we're getting to next. There was a failure, page 83 on this book says, they failed to discipline any student. None of them. The president of that school backed down. I'll read you a couple other things. Antifa, listen to this. Antifa protesters, clad in black, which they were actually Berkeley students, came out later. They used flagpoles to batter a woman and her husband as they were pinned against metal barriers, unable to get away. The woman was clubbed on the head. Her husband was struck in the temple, began to bleed. Immediately after that, other protesters blinded them by spraying mace in their eyes. They started crying out for help. Protesters punched them, hit them on the head with sticks until onlookers were able to help pull them over the barricades. Meanwhile, five or six protesters dragged Jennings a few feet away where they kicked and beat him until bystanders pulled attackers off as he lost consciousness. The police had barricaded themselves in the building. What happened to the deputy sheriff in Parkland? What happened to him? He's going to jail. Remember that? Now, I don't know what all went on with that poor guy. I don't know. But he got the book thrown at him. These cops are sitting there scared to death, hiding in a building while people are getting about beat to death. Nothing's done. We've let this happen. The system has let this happen. Anyway, they were barricaded. And she learned that when someone tried to help her get into the building to rinse her eyes, the police turned them away. Wouldn't let them come into the building. They were afraid that other people would get in. There's other things here. The mob got its way. The speech was canceled. Police issued a shelter-in-place campus lockdown, and they took Yiannopoulos and took him over to an undisclosed location. So they had their way. Now, this is a turning point because Berkeley and everything after began this aftermath, and because not one of the students... Now, it came out and it says that they came out on Facebook and said the Antifa people said that behind those bandanas and black t-shirts were the faces of your fellow Berkeley students. They did not discipline any student, even those who publicly admitted that they participated. Nothing. And so everybody's afraid. Because there was no authority, there's no leadership, there's no discipline, this is what you get. Chaos. And sadly, I've said this before in our little study here, why did this even happen? Because what Berkeley has been teaching for decades is coming in fruition. What do you expect? What do you expect? You teach humanism, you teach secularism, you teach evolution, you teach atheism. What do you think is going to happen? This is what happens. Lawlessness. Lawlessness. Let's look at another one. This is Charles Murray. Charles Murray at Middlebury College. Charles Murray at Middlebury College. Now, what happened here? They were going to have a talk. And they were going to have a talk about one of his current books. Let me write the name of it here. The book was called Coming Apart. Now, again, he was affiliated with a conservative think tank, and he talked about, what he was talking about in that book is the dysfunction of the white working class. And they were trying to justify, you got to understand these guys. They spent their time trying to figure out, how in the world did Donald Trump get in office? What is wrong with America? Maybe it's this dysfunctional white working class. Maybe they're the morons that voted Trump into office or something. So he wrote a book about that, about, you know, how did this happen? And the book, you know, he was even, he had an anti-immigration, and he actually was against some of Donald Trump's policies. So the college was like, oh, our students will love this. But you know what happened? The students realized that way back in 1994, this guy had written another book. They weren't even protesting about the book he just wrote. This guy, way back in 94, wrote a book called The Bell Curve. And all he said in that book, it was one of those studies like you do for a dissertation like what I did, where you do surveys and you run statistics to try to see if there's a significant correlation. And he was trying to correlate to see if there was any effect with, it was IQ scores across racial groups. What affected the IQ scores? Was it their environment? Was it their genetics? He did a bunch of surveys and he correlated that. It's statistics. It's just math. That's all it is. And he actually said, and he suggested in that book, he suggested that the IQ differences across racial groups may not be only because of environmental factors. Again, that's what the liberals want you to think, right? This guy has a low IQ because he just didn't have the same privilege as the other white boys in his class or something. And they're trying to come up with an excuse that it's the environment. So you do what they do and they build these multi-million dollar facilities of housing and to put them in and they ruin them in 10 years and they're slums again. It's not the environment, it's the heart, people. It's the heart. Anyway, that's a whole other topic. So since he even suggested that 20 years ago, they got mad. They said, we're not going to listen to this guy. We're not going to listen to this Charles Murray guy. So they tried to protest and they said, this guy's a white supremacist. Because he did a dissertation statistical study, he got called a white supremacist. And so they tried to disinvite him. They wouldn't disinvite him. They said, no, we're going to go through with it. We're going to have him. So what they did was they went to his talk and they intended to shut it down by chanting in unison and shouting over his attempts to speak. So when that happened, Stanger, the political science professor that was interviewing him, Mrs. Stanger, or Dr. Stanger, she said, we're going to move to a different room. Now here's the picture. He showed up and here's what they did. They turned their backs on him and hold up these signs. Respect existence. Resist white supremacy here. Let me see. This one on the far right, I wanted to read it. Respect existence or expect resistance. Respect existence or expect resistance. These people are crazy. So they went in there and they caused a storm. They were shouting, screaming, chanting. They turned their backs on him. You know, we're united here in this front. And so Stanger, the lady right there on the right, that's the professor, political science professor, that invited him to do the interview and the talk. It was just a little chit-chat talk that the students were invited to expose different ideas and to think. Heaven forbid we think. So they moved him to this private room here and they did a live stream in a private room where people could go on their computers and watch him if they wanted to listen to the talk. You know, it was behind a locked door. Students soon discovered where they were, continued to try to stop him from speaking by pounding on the walls and pulling the fire alarms to the building. Then when the live stream ended, as Murray and Stanger began to leave, they got basically accosted by 8 masked individuals in an attack. They grabbed her by the back of the hair and yanked her around. They chased them, tried to chase them. They ran to their cars to try to flee. People were beating on their cars, jumping on the hood. These people, they're animals. They're animals. I can't help but think, that is a human being, that lady. She probably has a husband and kids. She may have grandkids. No, you don't deserve to be treated like that. I don't even care if our ideologies differ. So what? We're not supposed to treat people that way. It's horrible. But I've got a right to do it because I was offended. So I turned to violence. So they eventually were able to drive off and they tried to gather for dinner. And then they found out that they were going to dinner, so the students tried to follow them. They ended up just going to a totally different location. And then Mrs. Stanger had to go to the hospital. She had severe whiplash and neck injuries. She had to go to physical therapy for months because of all of this mess. And here's the kicker. No charges made. That's physical assault. Now, if I was married, and if Megan didn't have my coffee ready when I said to, and I walked over there and yanked her by the hair and said, "Woman, you make my coffee," and gave her whip. I would never do that, by the way, because I'd be the one with whiplash. I don't have any here, but she'd grab something and I'd be dead. And if I did that, what would happen? I would go to jail. Would I deserve to go to jail? Yes. But they can get away with it because they are the oppressed. They were offended. It's us versus them. And emotional reasoning to validate in my mind why I can use violence when somebody else just used words or was going to use words. Just the thought of that person saying something. It's like they assumed they knew what the speech was going to be about. They assumed from the beginning, he's going to offend me. He hadn't even spoken yet, but he has that look about him. He's going to offend me. He's white. He is going to say something pro-Trump. We got to stop him. You don't know that. I don't know what that man was going to say. Listen to what Professor Stanger said. Now listen to this. She said, "What alarmed me most," that's the lady here that got hurt, she said, "was what I saw in the eyes of the crowd. Those who wanted the event to take place made eye contact with me." She could sense that. "Those intent on disrupting it steadfastly refused to do so. They couldn't look at me directly," listen, "because if they had, they would have seen another human being." Now that says a lot right there. They couldn't look at her. They didn't want to process the fact that this is a human. That could be a grandmother. She can have kids at home. But we're going to do that to her. And the school did nothing. Nothing. There's one more I'll share with you. Heather McDonald, a university called Claremont McKenna. Now, you can't read all of that flyer. I'll try to help you read it in a minute. This one wasn't as severe as some of the other ones. But here is this lady. Let me read a few things here. She wrote a book in 2016 called The War on Cops. Because remember all the stuff that was going on with the police officers? She argued, now here we go. Here's her argument in the book. Black Lives Matter, those protests, okay, the BLM protest made police more hesitant to enter and actively engage in minority neighborhoods. Now, doesn't that make sense? Yeah. If I knew as a police officer that if I was going to go into a minority neighborhood and be ganged up on and be lied about and be falsely accused, would I even want to go in there? No. I ought to stay away from it. I'm not losing my career. I'm not going to risk getting shot and leaving my family behind over someone that's going to falsely accuse me. And that was her argument. She was trying to tell them, look, guys, I know you have a valid point on maybe some of these guys getting shot, whatever. But the way you're handling it is only going to escalate the violence in your communities because the cops are not going to want to go in there. That was her simple argument. She was trying to help them say, hey, guys, take a different approach. That's all she was arguing. Take a different approach. Oh, that just made people, go nuts. She was saying that there's evidence that when all eyes are on police misconduct, crime may go up. Even progressives said that that was probably true. Well, she was going to come and present her thesis at the campus. And her thesis would be allowing violence on campus. Her words would be allowing violence. That's what they said. And so the students mobilized with a call on Facebook to show up wearing black, to bring your comrades. What are we, Russia or something? We communists all of a sudden? Well, maybe we are. I don't know. Bring your comrades because we're shutting her down. That was their words. Now, here's one of the flyers that actually went around. They painted red devil horns on her. Can you see that? It says, "Shut down anti-black fascist Heather McDonald." Because she was making a simple argument. And here's what they wrote about her. "Condemns Black Lives Matter, supports racist police officers, supports increasing fascist law and order." Law and order is fascist, guys. Did y'all know that? That's their definition. Then I'm trying to read the small print. "Anti-black scholar Heather McDonald has been invited to speak at Claremont McKenna College on Thursday, April 6th at 5:30 p.m. at the Athenaeum, whatever that is, some kind of auditorium. Join the action with students of color at the Claremont Colleges to shut her down. Because she wants law and order. She's a fascist. Well, they said, here's what they said. Here's what the student said. Engaging with her, a white supremacist, fascist supporter of the police state, is a form of violence. Engaging with her is a form of violence. And here's some other thing. Either you support students of marginalized identities, particularly black students, or leave us to protect and organize for our communities without the impositions of your patronization, without your binary respectable politics, and without your monolithic precepts of protest and organizing. In other words, you either are with us or we'll do our own thing. Us versus them. Us versus them. If engaged, Heather McDonald would not be debating on differences of opinion, but the right of black people to exist. How did they draw all those conclusions? Now listen, the assertion that a speaker would deny those things, that's a form of what we call catastrophizing. We're going to catastrophize it. Had she spoken yet? No. They made conclusions. The students called her a fascist white supremacist. They labeled her. So they had fortune telling. They predicted what they thought she was going to say. They made it a catastrophe. And they labeled her with all kinds of dirty names to get her away. So they were able to, you know, accost her in the hallway, all kinds of signs and stuff. And they were able to have their way with that one too. Here's some examples of these untruths that are happening here. This being able to shut down colleges. There's a few more we'll talk about here. Real quick, let me try to hurry up. I'm slow. Hate speech equals violence. Hate speech equals violence. Now, here is a syllogism from Lisa Barrett. Now, Lisa Barrett is a professor of psychology. She's well-respected. She's a professor of emotion research at the Northeastern. So, here's her syllogism. You know what a syllogism is, right, guys? All dogs have four legs. There's two minor premises and a major premise. Mallory's like, advanced math, shoot me now. And the second premise has to be a member of the set of the first premise, or it's illogical. She remembers all this. Okay. So all dogs have four legs. Samson is a dog. Therefore, Samson has four legs. It's a syllogism. Okay. And remember, Samson was a member of the first one. He's a dog. So we're good. It's a logical syllogism. There's all kinds of these, you know, Socrates, mortal, all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, Socrates is mortal, etc. But here's our syllogism. So A, B, C. Words can cause stress. Okay. That's true. Words can cause stress. Prolonged stress can cause physical harm. That may be true in some cases. You know, people get stressed out, have heart issues, all kinds of stuff. Therefore, stress can be a form of violence. Now, here's what stress can be stressful. It can cause problems. It can cause, you know, people, I've known people that had to stop. The Pastor Rosola down in Peru, he was running that ministry by himself. He was getting 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night, working 20 hours a day, literally. Getting to his house at 3 a.m., sleeping for 2 hours and going back at it. And about 8 years ago, he was hospitalized, heart issues, and the doctors literally told him, you've got to stop. You're overworking yourself. You're stressing yourself out. Your body can't handle that stress. Oh, cool. Yeah, there's problems. But here's the thing I want you to think about. Look, watch this. Well, actually, I have it written in here. What if I replace the first premise? Words can cause stress, okay? Let's replace it with something. What if I chose breaking up with your girlfriend can cause stress? Stress can cause physical harm. Therefore, breaking up with your girlfriend is a form of violence. Homework can cause stress. Prolonged stress can cause physical harm. Therefore, homework is a form of violence. Students, just enjoy that this year. Just every time Mrs. Brainerd assigns a history project, say, it's so violent, Mrs. Brainerd. That's the point. You see what I'm trying to make here? You can put anything you want there that causes stress, that actually causes more stress, right? Well, again, it's the concept creep. Remember we talked about concept creep? So we've redefined violence. Words can be harmful. But is that the same as violence?
No.
Unless you take their definition of violence, which again, the concept creep, we've taken the concept of violence and we broadened it to include anything that emotionally hurts me as well. So I've already placed the premise or having policies at work. Having a a lot of you men have jobs, you have a policy manual at work or something. Sure, I'm sure you do. You have policies you have to follow. Even if you work at Chick-fil-A or McDonald's, they've got policies. You want to do the right thing. Policies at work can cause stress. I can't check my Instagram. I'm so stressed. My phone's in my locker at Chick-fil-A. I'm getting messages on my chat. Somebody is double tapping my picture right now, and I'm getting that heart icon. My Snapchat story didn't get updated. Oh. Policies at work can cause stress. Stress is a form or can cause physical harm. So policies at work can be a form of violence. You see that if we allow what's happening to continue, they're going to make anything go. You can't tell me what to do. You're being violent. You can't give me homework. That's violence. You think I'm crazy? That's what they'll do. It's coming. It starts here. It's going to include everything. Anything that stresses you out is going to be violence. This is where we're headed. Now, I know you students love that. I know you're so excited that you're going to have that homework excuse this year. So, again, why not use the opposing view to make my view stronger instead of being offended? But that involves the brain. That involves mental faculties and thinking, and we don't like that much. Here's a quote that I wanted to end with. I meant to go a lot farther today. Here's a few things. Here's a man named Van Jones. Now, Van Jones, yeah, he was Obama's green jobs advisor, okay? Liberal guy, very liberal, but he actually has something here. If there's one good thing that came out of Van Jones, this statement's pretty good. Now, the guy's liberal, but he at least sees something. Here's what he tells, you know, about the safe spaces and all those kind of things. First he said, there's two ideas about safe spaces. One's a good idea, one's a terrible idea. The idea of being physically safe on a campus. That's a good idea. We want to be physically safe, don't we? We don't want someone to run around with a gun shooting people. It's terrible. Then he says, I'm fine with that. But there's another view that I think is coming up, which is a horrible view, that I need to be safe ideologically. I need to be safe emotionally. I just need to feel good all the time. And if someone says something that I don't like, that's a problem for everybody else, including the university administration. And Van Jones says, that's a problem. At least the man saw that. But here's the quote that he also said. I kind of like this. He says, we got to be safe ideologically. He says, I don't want you to be safe ideologically. I don't want you to be safe emotionally. I want you to be strong. Now again, this is nothing biblical. This is just liberal stuff. But it has some good practical input. I want you to be strong, and that's different. I'm not going to pave the jungle for you. Put on some boots and learn how to deal with adversity. I'm not going to take all the weights out of the gym. That's the whole point of the gym. This is the gym. Now again, the man's a liberal. But there's a lot of validity in that right there. You know, what is it, John, Planet Fitness, where they have the no-something zone? The safe zone at Planet Fitness. It's $10 a month, and all the stuff is purple and yellow. I don't know if it's LSU or what, but... Yeah, no, judgment-free zone. That's what it is. That's what they have. They advertise it. And if you're in there doing... There are certain weights things you can't do. Like if you do the... I'm not good at this, but if you do... I probably hurt my back just bending over. If you do the deadlift thing, is that what they call it? You know, they hold it, and then they drop it. Boom! You can't do that at Planet Fitness. You know why? Because the poor little guy or girl over here doing the 10-pounder, and she hears the 400 pounds hit the floor. You offended me! I wanted to do 400. So since I can't do it, you have to do 5. I know that's a silly example, but that's what's going on. What's happening? Put some boots on and learn how to deal with adversity. Because guess what? What do you think life is? Again, and it's getting harder and harder, even in our jobs, because there's a whole crop of parents now that think this way. And it is hard to teach. Do your work or face the consequences. Put on some boots and get in there and crank it. Okay, you messed up. Well, get it right next time then. Work through it and work harder. We got to protect them. Someone might think bad of my kid. They made a B minus. They made a C. Well, I had to get over that real quick because I was worried about my kids making straight A's and then they pulled stuff and they're just, you know, kids are kids. You just learn to, hey, do your best. Now, if I know your best is an A and you made a C, we're going to have a problem. We got a big problem. But if, you know, poor Jared over there, well, Miss Pepper's not here, he tried to jump up to Algebra 1 just to try it last year. And I made him. I made it, but God, it was adversity. Put on the boots, boy. And he had a hard time. He's going to do Algebra 1 as a ninth grader in high school. Because, hey, whatever. He was in middle school, try it. He's going to, but he's, hey, did it kill him? He's still walking. He may be a little upset at me because we had some roundabouts at the dinner table sometimes going over algebra. But you know what? He's still here and he's still breathing. And he's going to go at it again next year. He's going to put his boots on and he's going to go through it. He didn't make an A. Did he try his hardest? I can tell you right now, I know the boy did. Megan knows. She was over there. I can't remember algebra. You know, he tried his hardest, but hey, that's the best you can do. I can live with that. But we've got to protect everybody. I got to stop. Let's teach our young people to have some grit. Well, John Wayne is what they need. They need a dose of John Wayne, Mr. Whitney. I don't know. But we need some grit because that world's not easy out there. There's a devil that's walking around like a roaring lion and he's ready to eat you up. And you got to have some strength and some grit and you got to be in this book because that's where strength is right here in the Word of God. And our young people will get through. Father, thank you for the time this morning that we've had. And I pray that you would just continue to help us as parents and working in Christian school ministry, all those things. Now, Father, you would help us in these difficult times to keep doing what's right, to emphasize the right principles and the right character. I thank you for the good attention this morning. In Christ's name, amen.